if you are all of the same mind, I'm going to go ahead and link on to YouTube. Does that sound okay?
Vincenzo, be safe. I see your mobile. I am.
All right.
I just want to make sure you guys knew I'm going to be here, I swear.
Is everybody ready for me to go live?
Yes.
Great. We are live. Okay. Welcome to the Thursday, June 24th Downtown Advisory Board meeting. Thanks for making time for this. Opening exercises, I guess we'll take roll call. Charles Weathers.
Here.
Josh Tay. Tyson Giza.
Here.
Edward Druitt.
Here.
Linda Nishioka.
Here.
Vincenzo Maduri.
Here.
Scott McLeod. Technical difficulties, he might be joining us. Brad Compton. No Brad. Okay. Approval of the agenda. Do I hear a motion to approve?
I will move to approve the agenda.
This is Linda.
This is Jordan, I'll second.
Yep.
Jordan seconds. All those in favor of moving to approve the agenda, say aye.
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 Motion carries. And now to the approval of the minutes from May 27th. Can I hear a motion, please?
I move that we approve the minutes from May 27th.
And I'll second that motion.
Tyson seconds. All those in favor of approving the minutes from our May 27th meeting, say aye.
Aye.
All those not, nay. Motion carries. Action items, none, just a change. And I think we can move forward to information reports to our esteemed guest, Ward 1 City Councilor Stapleton. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So I did get a list of questions. Do you want me to just dive in, or would you guys like to be the ones to ask me maybe questions on the fly?
Well, maybe
I'll speak right now, Josh, if you want. I was hoping maybe when you guys introduced yourself as board members, you would say where you, your association with downtown. We're going to be asking the Councillor Stapleton to share a little bit about herself. So I thought if you guys, she might be interested in hearing what your relationship is with downtown, if you wouldn't mind, Josh, going through that kind of roll call again real quick, and everybody can say their association. And then I'm hoping, Councilor Stapleton, you're okay with addressing those questions that we gave you in order that we get information from you instead of us interrupting you. But the board knows that if it's really, they have to ask, they can, but I've asked them to wait to give you a chance to speak, if that's okay.
Sounds great. Yay.
Okay, let's run it back through. Linda, I'll just start from the top on our board members list. You just want to kick us off.
Hi, Councillor Staple, and I was at the Salem Main Street meeting with you as well. So I'm on that committee. I'm on the Downtown Advisory Board. I have a condo downtown and the Nishioka building I am part owner on.
Okay, Brad is not here. Tyson Giza.
Hi, Councillor Stapleton. I'm Tyson. I've been a DAV member for about a year and a half now. I work for Palbank Valuation. We're a commercial appraisal firm, and our office is downtown. And as a matter of fact, I live downtown now. So that would be my connection. Josh, go ahead.
Thank you. Tyson's my neighbor downtown. I'm sitting here in our office in downtown Salem. Tyson's apartment is a half a block that way. Commercial real estate broker. The firm's been around for a long time here in Salem. We do a lot of work in downtown. And my role in DAB as Science Chair is that I represent technically represent real estate or banking in the Riverfront Downtown Urban Renewal Area. Our wonderful DAB packet. Thank you for reading the team. And that's next we have Vincenzo. Vincenzo, reminder to please be safe. You're in a moving vehicle.
No, I'm at my office now. I'm about to sign in on my computer. My name is Vincenzo Maggiore, and I'm the founding artistic director of Enlightened Theatric at Salem's Historic Grand Theater. And I've been on the board, I actually don't know, Sheree, quite a few years. So I've been doing this, and I like it, and thank you for being here to answer our questions.
Thank you, Vincenzo. Scott does not appear to be on, so we will go to Jordan. Jordan Truitt.
Hi, Chair Stapleton, Jordan Truitt here. Work with Josh, First Commercial Real Estate, Commercial Brokerage. Our office is, as Josh said, here in downtown. And a portion of our property on Front Street is within the north downtown urban renewal area, kind of bordering up that area. So a lot of stuff previous to that, but that's me right now. Thanks for joining us.
And lastly, Charles, please finish.
All right, save the best. I'm Charles Weathers. I own 440 State Street and operate 440 Food Hall. I also am part owner of 990 Broadway, the mixed-use building going up on the former Jason Lee site. And I have eaten lunch downtown for about 25 years in a row now.
Thank you, Charles. So, Sheree, that is us. That is them, minus a few of our members and council. So, Sheree, where do you want to go from here? Should we kick it off?
We will let Councillor Stapleton now answer those questions that we gave her. Thank you, Josh.
Wonderful.
Sounds great. Well, it's really great to meet you all and to kind of get the lay of the land as far as where you guys all land in the downtown area and how we all are connected to each other. I actually don't live too far from downtown. We live on Capitol Street up here, right over by Parrish, so in between Union and D. So I feel like I'm a downtowner, but I'm not sure if I land in the actual boundaries, but pretty dang close. So at any rate, we are a little family here. I have two kids, Winston, who's 10, and Eliza, who's 12. And I've been married to my husband for almost 28 years, guys. Kind of insane to think about. We were high school sweethearts, met out at Perrydale High School. If any of you guys are familiar with the area, that's just west of here. I see some heads nodding. So at any rate, born and raised in Salem, though. My parents still own the place I grew up on, which is up on Alter Heights Road, up there by the water tower that sits on the ground, if some of you guys are familiar with the lay of the land out there. So at any rate, long time Salemite here. And when my husband and I got married, just so you guys know, the first question is, tell us a little bit about who you are and why you ran for council. So so at any rate, when my husband and I got married, we lived in just South Salem, so right off of Owen Street. And that was our first collective experience of living in town. And it's a pretty high-impact area over there with South River Road and the railroads and all that great stuff. But we used to walk the railroads. Don't tell anybody since this is on YouTube. We used to walk the railroads down to Riverfront Park and just have a great time kind of living close to downtown and being able to walk places, which was new for us. Living in the country, you don't have things like sidewalks. So that was pretty great. My husband was going to OSU at the time and getting his degree in horticulture. And so we moved out into the country. There's an apartment on the farm that we lived in for a couple of years. And then from there, we sold everything we owned, actually, and went to Europe for a few months. And we did some couch surfing back before that was a thing. And the reason I tell you this story is it really changed the way that I interact with a city or with people. That trip to Europe really changed my ideas of living in the world and how things could be done, I think. When you live in America and you grow up here, you kind of think this is like the only way and the best way to do things. And then you broaden your horizons and you go to other countries and you realize that there are just different ways of being. And we loved the idea of being able to jump on public transportation at any point in time and be in another country in a matter of hours, or you know, just be able to move about more freely. And we loved all of the public areas. It's much more, I guess, parks or plazas, lots of public art that we fell in love with. So just that more communal way of living, I guess. The attitude is a little different. Here in America, you're much more individualistic and just younger, I think, is a good way of saying that. So we really were attracted to that and loved that. And when we came back, we bought our first house here in Northeast Salem over on 18th Street. And we just kind of started trying to make that same communal living more of a reality for us. And so started just getting involved, and we led our neighborhood watch for many, many years. And we did what's called a Sunday supper, where we opened up our home once a month for neighbors, and everybody kind of brought something to share. And we got to know our neighbors and see how we can help each other out. And then from there, it just went into a bunch of working with the school there, Englewood Elementary. I was the PTC lead on that, and we volunteer there. So just started getting more and more involved, especially when kids grew up. And then I met Chuck Bennett, and that was several years ago. And he and I met at a neighborhood night out and started talking about sidewalks. And if you are familiar with Northeast Salem, you know about the sidewalk issue. There's lots of issues there. Old infrastructure, obviously big trees. So the two aren't getting along very well. So at any rate, that's how I got connected with the city and started seeing how city government works and how you can be an active participant in the process. And so Chuck and I worked on some sidewalk repairs in our neighborhood, but then we also got the crossing signal at 19th and Market, which was our kind of our big thing together. And if you're familiar at all with the area, there's a bunch of little kids who go to a grade school on the opposite side, on the south side of Market, and they're expected to cross Market Street, you know, a few times a day. And nobody drives 30 on Market, and it's four lanes, and so it's kind of hellish. So we got that put in, and that kind of just put me into neighborhood association meetings and connections with folks. Helped out to start the Englewood Forest Festival, which put me in a whole other group of people, just kind of building on all these experiences, building on each other. And then I was at a neighborhood association meeting pitching for a road diet on Capitol Street, and met Kara there, our old counselor for Ward 1. And she and I just kind of hit it off and started connecting more and more. And then she asked me to run when she discovered that she was no longer going to run for a second term. So that is how I began to kind of get involved in city politics and made connections the way that I did. And of course, Kara has been a huge help to me in getting caught up on all the things that are happening in Ward 1, and especially in downtown. You know, I got the email about the parking or about treescaping, and I was familiar with all those things because Kara really handed off all of her different projects and the things that she was interested in a really well and complete way. So that was great. So yeah, that's kind of how I got to council. I guess the reason why I ran is a little bit different. I guess my husband and I are just, we're public servants at heart. My husband works for the Department of Ag, and we're really attracted to the service style lifestyle. We know that that's not the best way to make a bunch of money, but that's not why we're here or what we want to be remembered for. So doing this just kind of made sense. It fit with our philosophy and how we view things. When I started realizing, you know, am I going to run for school board or am I going to run for city council? And just, you know, a city council fits so many more of my interests. I'm really interested in education, of course, but how does that interact with our communities? How does it interact with the city? And then all my other loves, you know, parks and active transportation and tree canopy and climate change and just so many things that I wanted to have a say in or you know, be a voice at the table. And then another reason was that it was 100 years since us ladies got the right to vote. And I figured what a great way to commemorate all of the work that those ladies did for us by running for office. So that was on the emotional side of things, but a very good reason, I think, to run for office and represent women. So that's why I ran. I will say that the past for 6-9 months, Kara left a little bit, so I was a partial counselor there for a few months. But this first part of my journey has been awesome. It's been crazy with COVID and all of those things that have made, you know, wildfires and ice storms, which have made it so challenging and difficult for us. But I have never had so much fun. I love everything that I'm doing, and I wish more people were as enthusiastic about it as I am, and love digging into all these different things, and just doing what I do best, which is caring really hard and having a lot of energy to put behind that. So that's me as a counselor. The next question that we had was the goals and the visions for downtown. What are my goals and visions for downtown, and then in the role of and how we can kind of work together. So I think that you guys want me to pause in between these different questions? There's four of them.
Keep going, this is great.
Okay, because I guess I'm a politician, I can talk a lot. So just like give me a little time out and I'll stop. So goals, I love all of the tree staking ideas that have been talked about. When Kara was telling me about them, I was like, why aren't they happening now? And where is this happening? And why can't we push this farther along faster? That is a lesson for me, just in general. I guess patience is a lesson we're always gonna learn in life, but I'm one of those people who just kind of likes to push and push really hard and get things done and work fast. So obviously government doesn't work that way. So learning to, I guess, slow down a little bit and enjoy the ride. So the goals for downtown, I mean, I think that we've all talked about this as a council and all the different communities, like the small town group that I was with last week. You know, we're looking at a thriving small businesses, thriving downtown, lots of living, lots of dining, lots of entertainment. You know, how many can we get that? The park up and running with the amphitheater. I am so stoked about that, you guys. I got a tour of that thing and I was just could see it. You know, I could see all the people there. I could see them in the hotels. I could see big ticket names. I sat at that rim where they have the elevated bar kind of along the viewing platform. Have you guys been down there? And I was just imagining, you know, like a cold drink in your hand and you're listening to some great music. Just really, really excited about the amphitheater and what that's going to do for downtown as well. I really love the idea of living downtown. My husband and I have toyed around with it a little bit, getting a condo maybe when the kids are older. But we are horticulturists and we are huge gardeners, so I'm not sure how I would do without a garden. But that might be something that I could experience later in life. But a lot of my focus in the last couple of months have been going towards Front Street, and I just really have this vision of Front Street in my head, so north downtown area, and been talking to the chamber about it, been talking with Kristen, who's here today, with Chuck and with Chris Foy, and just trying to brainstorm ideas of how we can get the ball rolling. Met with a couple of people who own property over there and just talking about a vision. Vision casting is one of the things I love to do. Very inspirational and a great use of time, in my opinion. So just seeing that as another place where we can take that waterfront, which is the only section of waterfront in the city of Salem that isn't a highway or a park, and how can we get businesses over there? How can we get living over there? How can we do a linear park that connects it all together? Lots of conversations about that and dreams about that. And like I said, downtown with the streetscaping, thriving small businesses, how can we do that? How can we, of course, my next question is gonna be about managing homelessness, but how do we balance the needs of a few with the needs of everybody else? How do we walk this walk that we are now kind of forced down this path, and how are we gonna deal with that in the coming years? So that is kind of my visions of downtown. I think that somebody said it best, that the downtown is Salem's living room, and I totally agree. And it kind of seems like it's no one person's area, it's everybody's. And so how do we invest in that? I love all the things that are happening with the public art downtown. I'd love to see more of that. So yeah, just that's my vision. I don't know if that's exactly what you're looking for, but I do know that it is a young and maybe uneducated version of this, seeing that I'm a new counselor and not always know the ways, the ins and outs and all that. But and as far as the role of you all in helping support either shared goals, I get this question a lot, and I always kind of, I guess, struggle with it, because I think if you're on a board of a place down, you know, that you love, you're in it for the long haul, and you're in it because you love it, and you're in it because you want to be at the table and talk about the differences that we all have and try to come up with the best way forward. And I think that's what we all have to do, right? And I can just be a partner with you guys at your table and love it when you guys come to the counselors' meetings and give your feedback and email me suggestions or challenges that you're having and working through that together and trying to find the best solution. I mean, I think that's how I want to work with everybody, whether you're on a board or not. But, you know, I do know that people who are on committees or on boards are really, really committed, and they understand a lot about what's going on. And so I listen real hard when people like that come into the room. So,
Ms. Stapleton,
yeah.
What in that vision, what's kind of like the, for you, because I don't even know how long terms last, but what's kind of your, what's the top, what are you focusing on? What is the big focus in the midst of all those things?
All of those things, yeah. So counselors are on 4-year terms. So you're stuck with me for 4 years. So for me, okay. Can I also, I'm going to go into another story here. When I was campaigning, I would get this question and I hated it. Not your question. Sorry, that came out wrong. I would get the, what are your top 2 goals? And I would say, I started a spreadsheet, because I'm a spreadsheet kind of person, before my term started, and I have 60 goals. So I have 60 goals, and that's just off the top of my head without any education about how things work. I have 60 things I want to do in 4 years. So when asked, what are your top 2? I really struggled with that. And the person I was going against, Jan, he always was public safety and infrastructure, right? Those were his top 2 things. And I was always those are important and great. Yeah. But so are this, however many other things that I want to do. And I honestly think that that's just, I don't know if I want to talk about this on YouTube. Let's do this. So, I don't know if you figured this out yet or not, but I'm a pretty hardcore feminist. And I laugh because as a woman in America, in the age that we live in, I am asked to do 1,000,001 things behind the scenes and unseen and unpaid and all of those things and keep it all rolling. And so I have 1,000,000 things on my list at any given time, and 1,000,000 things, and I call it the executive function, right? I know when the kids' teeth need to be cleaned next, right? Isaac doesn't know that. You don't even know who their dentist is, right? So all of these things, the executive function that we do, or the emotional labor that we do as women, or asked to do as women, or more for the feminine role. So when I step into what some might call a male-dominated area, like politics, they ask me to tell them the top 2. And I just don't function like that, you know? So it's hard for me to answer your question. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. In my feminist brain, and the way that I was born and raised and bred in our society to function and to work, I have 1,000,000 things on my to-do list, and all of them are equally important. but if I narrow it down to just downtown, I want to say that the most active thing that I have going on right now is how to manage and end homelessness, just a tiny thing, because it impacts downtown so greatly in my ward. And I think the fun thing that I'm working on, not that managing homelessness is not fun, it's just complex. The fun thing I think that is kind of right at the top of my list right now for downtown is working on Front Street in North Downtown. But simultaneously, I think on the other issues, I think Kristen could talk to you about the emails I've sent, right, about different things. I've been sending emails about parking. I've been talking to people about the treescaping downtown. I've been talking about outdoor dining downtown. So those are all kind of simultaneously going. I will say that this area of town, I feel like I need to learn more. And so I am actively trying to learn as I'm going on all of those fronts. But does that answer your question? I feel like I did a pretty good
job. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Great. Okay.
So, Councilor Stapleton, let me give you a break for a second.
Sure.
So, learning that you are interested in on Front Street in the north part of downtown, I'm sure is very interesting to the board, because when we had our strategic plan done in 2011, they divvied up the urban renewal area into little areas, and there's north downtown, and then there's the north waterfront part of downtown. And the recommendations in that plan were that that area would be more towards the bottom strategically for how we recommended investments, because of Front Street and the railroad sinking on Front Street and the lack of infrastructure on Front Street. But it was certainly identified as an area that would really contribute to the look and the feel within the urban renewal area. So what the board has done is that they put money towards hiring a consultant to do an analysis of the zoning and the barriers with redevelopment in North Downtown, because the city was selected with the University of Oregon to do sustainable cities. You probably heard about that. And the graduate architectural students came up with some amazing ideas as to what to do in that area that you're talking about. They had a railroad museum. They thought about partnering with OSU to put a viticulture thing there. In fact, it was years ago, but they even thought that it would be a great location for a new YMCA to be down on the water. But again, when they talked about the challenges and the barriers, the zoning, the multiple overlays, the infrastructure. So just know that this is very helpful. Again, we've kind of been working with CD now to try to come up with some new zoning. But you know, our focus right now has been the streetscape in downtown, because it's something that benefits everybody, businesses, property owners, guests, helps the value, but we know it will be, it will require years to phase it in. We can't do it all at once. But I do appreciate hearing that that's an area of interest to you, and we can look at that with you to see, you know, what we can do to help you. We certainly have grant money that goes in that area, but Front Street is such a challenge.
Yes, no, and not tiny little challenges here. That railroad is something else. But yes, and I am also learning a lot about that. You know, I was reading the report that those students sent over, and learning about all the zoning issues and talking to units through the R. Salem plan, and figuring out how they're trying to reduce the complications of the zoning in that area to help any kind of development that would happen. So, yeah, I'm glad that you guys also at least have it on your list. We might be like flip-flopped, but as I think I've told you guys that, I guess I don't really have a hierarchy of things that I want to do. They're just all things I want to do. So
great, we are live. Okay,
so
welcome to the Thursday, June 24th, Downtown Advisory Board meeting. Thanks for making time for this.
Always a complicated topic. And I think that I feel really privileged to live in this time and to be in this position at this time. You know, one of the reasons we moved more towards downtown, not only do we love old houses and old architecture, like what we got in this house, built in 26, but we wanted our kids to not be hidden from our homelessness crisis, and we wanted them to be able to see it. When you live in a neighborhood, you sometimes see them. You know, we'd have them come by and go through a garbage can or something like that when we were over on 18th. But it was much more hidden from us in that neighborhood, just a mile from here. So when we live here, though, we get, you know, folks coming asking for work, or I had somebody knock on my door the other night asking for directions. We just get to have a little bit more interaction with folks, and we wanted our kids to see that and be in contact with it. And so I feel like it's a really good life lesson for them to learn. As far as me and my role, sometimes I find it hard to sleep at night with the weight of responsibility on this topic. And it's what I often tell people, especially on the campaign trail, is that it's a 30-year problem, and it's taken us 30 years to get here, and it'll take us 30 years to get out. And that's not always easy to hear or the process. And it's hard to understand what it's going to take as a community to really address the issue and get to a place where we can kind of find our feet again on this topic. I'm not entirely sure it's going to take 30 years to get out, but I like to be realistic with folks. So I would love to see it move faster. Lord, I would love to see it move lightning fast, but like I mentioned before, it takes a lot to get a government to change or a big corporation or whatever it is. It takes even more to get a society to shift as well. So we're playing the long game, I think, on this one. So as far as managing, as you guys know, with COVID, we had the parks, two parks open, and we are now closing those. You guys know all of this, but I'm gonna kind of, I guess, launch into it a little bit. And as we start to close the parks down to camping, we are trying to simultaneously open up safe spaces for folks to go. We're looking at different sheltering options around the entire city. So Gretchen has been, and I'm sure other staff have been working tirelessly to find locations. I know it seems like it should be an easy task. And sometimes when I was less educated, I would get very frustrated with this aspect of things. But now that I am in the position that I am and get the access to the information that I have, I'm learning a lot and knowing the challenges that the city is up against. So I do know that we are making headway on this very important aspect of finding locations, land, buildings, whatever it is, that we can get some smaller managed camps. And I think managed camps is the way to go. I don't think putting everybody into a park, although it was the best option at the time, we've seen the negative consequences of that, and we're always learning, right? Joking around with Gretchen, that we're just adding to the playbook. Like every day, we're learning more and more about the unintended consequences of decisions we've made, and how we want to learn from those and grow, and continue to make as educated decisions as we can, although not being able to see into the future and know exactly what's going to happen. So. Being nimble and adjusting where we can, of course, I think is council's goal always, whether it happens that way or not is I guess, to be debated. But yeah, we're looking at managed camps, looking at the Windows to the West, which is probably the closest one to downtown. And I think we're going to open that up for vehicle camping soon. And I'm very, very pleased with that, excited about that. And there's a few other ones. I haven't gotten word from Gretchen on any really big developments in that area, but we are going to be getting an update. I believe it's next month. I think we have a work session on an update on our homelessness crisis that's happening. So be looking for that on the calendar. And of course, We have to kind of manage this from both ends. We have to work on affordable housing to stop folks from experiencing homelessness or getting drugged into that phase. We have to work on getting wraparound services with our housing. And at the other end of the spectrum, we have to work on managing our campsites all the way down to managing, you know, human waste and garbage and how to feed people and how to shelter people. I was sending emails yesterday. What are we going to do when it's 111? Now, where's the shelter going to open for cooling? And what are the degrees that we're looking for before those open? And do we have volunteers signed up yet? You know, like, those are the things that I'm also looking at. So I think one of the reasons I love being a counselor is just the variety of the spectrum of what you get to work on, not only on affordable housing, but on opening up a cooling shelter, right? So it's just so wide, the challenges that we face with this. So I know downtown is hit especially hard with this topic, and it makes it extremely hard to run a business. And I know there's conversations about how do we find the balance between the needs of our unsheltered and the needs of our businesses and the needs of our community to live, you know, to come to their living room and be here and shop and play and eat and be able to walk on a sidewalk, you know, all of those hard things. And another reason why I am privileged that I get to be a part of this conversation at this time is that this is one of the areas where philosophy is really comes into play. And I love philosophy. And so it's fascinating, I guess. It's a fascinating time to be a human and to have this as something we'll work on together. So I'm going to open that up for questions now, because I could ramble on about this, but I want to use your time wisely and answer questions that you have in your mind. So I'll pause.
I got a question and then a comment. I can start with the comment. You mentioned about the intersection of homelessness and downtown businesses and being able to run them. But it's more than just being able to operate a business. It's about cleanliness. It's about safety, public safety. It's about other dynamics too. And of course, you know, the philosophy of it. Our firm, we've been working with Church of the Park to identify shelters around town, and so I know about safe parking programs. The nonprofit community has really stepped up, Church of the Park being a really prime example. Catholic Community Services, too, is now really coming into the full family building blocks. But also the city is trying on that front, and the model has been to pass through the nonprofits. In your opinion, do you think it's better to have empower the nonprofit community to fulfill these needs? And maybe it's not one or the other. Or do you believe that the city is more geared towards prepared to take on responsibility for managed camps and all the things that go with that? And more than just managed camps.
Great question. And I am a firm believer that good government has a really big part to play. But that has not been the philosophy of our nation for some time. For as long as I've been alive, 40 years or so, we have been divesting in all forms of government, all layers of government. And that's starting to show, in my opinion. Not starting. It's been happening for a while. But we're starting to have a conversation, I think, about it in a different way. So for me, the question that you're asking, I kind of want to tweak it a little bit and say that I believe that government has a very strong and important role to play, but maybe it's not city government. Maybe it's county, and maybe it's state, and maybe it's federal. Because I think historically, city government has been about parks and libraries, and I think that's about I'm not sure quite, I'm losing my vocabulary here, but you know, we've been about infrastructure and about water and sewer and roads, and that's kind of typically where we've thrived. And we have not been in the business of social services. That's my vocab, what I wanted. The libraries, the parks, that's the social services we got, right? And really our county was about public health, and you know, the state, and then all of these things, right, all the way up to HUD with all this help with affordable housing. If we had a Congress that was fully functioning and could pass some law, that was great. But we haven't had that in a really, really, really long time. And that is really starting to show. And the reason why the city is having to step up is because nobody else is. And this is, we're the last line, right? We're the last line of defense, if you want to look at it in a military type of way, which I'm not super excited about, but we're the last line. And so when nobody does anything for years and years and years, and we get handed a crisis, we have to step up, because there's no way around it. You know, if we weren't out cleaning up our streets, if we weren't out setting up, you know, organized camping, no other government agency is going to do it. The county's not doing it, right? Then it's all the way down to us. So I believe that government has an important role to play. I'm not entirely sure that city government is the government that I'm talking about. I also agree with you that our nonprofits need to be empowered and have the ability to move and do what they do best. So I think it's going to be a great partnership. I answered your question. Did I answer it well enough for you?
Yeah. And I know that the legislature, you know, signed guys coming up here in the next week, and they're going to be including, and there's a lot of bills coming through committee. And I know Salem's been the beneficiary of some of those bills, Navigation Center, i.e. Yep. Other funds too, American Rescue Plan dollars. Are you tracking any of these? And where do you think those funds are best suited, if in whatever form, city, state, county takes it on, for Salem's investments?
Yeah, so I think on the budget side of things, and Kristen, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we spent just over $8 million on our unsheltered in this last budget cycle, and a lot of that was our ARPA funds coming through, or they were designated for that. And I say that because obviously it might come out differently, and those funds will get moved around as needed. Did I get that right, Kristen?
Yeah, that's correct. And there are also things that are moving today and tomorrow at the state legislature to solidify some additional funds to come to the city to help with sheltering and other homeless services.
Thanks, Kristen. So am I tracking these bills? I will be honest with you and say no, because I am not a part of the legislative committee. I'm on a bunch of other committees, and so I have to prioritize my time. And so I always come prepared to all my committees and do those well. And when the legislative committee comes to council with their recommendations, I read them. I trust my coworkers, if I can call them coworkers. If I have questions, I call them, ask them about it, figure it out. A lot of stuff happens behind the scenes on council, as I'm sure you know. But I trust them to know what's best and to have good conversations about those and to find the best path forward for the city of Salem. But I do not watch with bated breath or track them on any computer or any kind of thing like that. But I am getting updates, you know, as soon as things come forward. You know, Steve is really great about updating us and keeping us posted on how things are moving and what that means for us. And I'll stop talking because I think Kristen has something to say.
I was going to say, if it's of interest, there's an email that just came out within like the last 5 minutes. That's kind of the latest of what's happening in the legislature. And right now, if nothing changes before they close, it wrapped this up around 4 p.m. today. It looks like we may be getting around another $10 million for shelters, as well as assistance with our housing voucher program and hotel sheltering. So that those combined would be another $1.8 million. And then there's also significant allocations that will be going to some of our nonprofits in the community, Center for Hope and Safety and the YMCA Veteran Housing Project, combined for about another $13.5-14 million. So
wait, that's great news.
Yeah, really, really good news.
Thank you for sharing that, Kristen.
Yeah.
Thank you, Counselor. I've got my questions answer. I don't want to be the only one to ask. I'm sure that people have some other ones as well.
No, it's great. They're great questions. And I think well, I got super excited with Kristen's notes. So my mind went a little fuzzy. I get super excited with anything with Center for Health and Safety, and I have to take the moment, since we are on YouTube, to say, you know, that's the number one leading cause for women who are experiencing homelessness is domestic violence. And I will say this a million times, I do not want to live in a world where there is domestic violence. I do not want to live in a world where 50% of Oregonian women are raped or sexually assaulted, and I find it infuriating that I have to live in this world and explain this to my kids. So do what you can, folks. It's not going to be me that changes that. It's going to be all of us. So I need your help in ending those two really devastating things and really important topics. Take that moment to say my little pitch. So yes, as you can see, so much funding. I see you just hang on a second. So much funding going to these different things. And I love that the veterans housing thing, that's another long-term issue that we've had that I see so much movement on. I know we're looking at one in West Salem. We're looking at the one here downtown with the YMCA. Fantastic. Like, I get super, super excited about that. The improvements that we're making to the Center for Hope and Safety with the housing that's going with that one, amazing. Couldn't be happier. And yeah, just so much happening. And you know, when we see these bills come through, that's when I feel super supported by my state government, you know, get warm, fuzzy feelings that government's working when things like this come through, that people see that people are hurting and they move to take action. And we as a city have been hurting for quite some time. And uniquely downtown has been hurting. So you guys should know that your state cares about you as we see these funds come through. I'll stop talking. Go ahead with your question.
So this is Linda, and I was going to ask the question, and Kristen or maybe Cherie can also fill in. I was looking at the county budget that got approved and found it interesting that there was not really any line item that was for homeless, but it was amongst several other line items that money were going towards navigation centers or nonprofits. But I wondered, my question really is geared for homelessness, as you've pointed out, is not going to go away. It's going to be many years of managing this. And I'm wondering if the county needs to look at their budget and not sort of bury that within it, or if there's some way that it could be promoted that they need to address it so that we can really appreciate how much money is or is not going to help facilitate the county needs. So if anybody can answer that, that'd be great, or know anything.
So I think the question is, are we wishing that the county would put a line item for addressing homelessness in their budget? Yes. The answer is yes. I would love that. It was told to me that a fellow counselor went to their State of the Union and they did not bring up, or not State of the Union, State of the County, and they did not bring up homelessness as a topic. And so that was very concerning and very frustrating for me personally and for many of the other counselors. We would love the county to step up and play a really active role in helping, especially with public health. Something I wanted to talk about earlier was about sobering center, right? That's another huge part of this puzzle that we need to get done that's going to help. And the county can play a really big role with that. So I think every single city staffer would say the same thing. I mean, maybe I should put it in words in their mouth, but I think counselors would as well. Just, we need partners, and we need our counties, both of them for the city of Salem, to really play more of an active role. And, you know, they say that the budget is a moral document. It is. It shows you where your priorities are, and I think the city of Salem's budget was phenomenal in that aspect. When you look at the budget in that way, seeing how much we're putting towards the number one issue here in our city and the many other things that are there as well. So I'll stop talking, but Kristen, maybe you have something to say.
Yeah, you know, it is hard to track through the city's budget the way it's presented, but Linda, through the continuum of care, the Homeless Alliance,
yes.
They have a money map that they update periodically that looks at different funding sources and governmental agencies and nonprofits to kind of track where all the money is within the region, how it's flowing in, and then how it's heading back out to address homelessness. So that is another way that we're getting kind of a more holistic and comprehensive look at not just our funding, but those of our other governmental partners within the region. And, you know, seeing what nonprofits those funds are going to and how it's helping in the community. And then just kind of piggybacking on your comment earlier about the, you know, purpose of government at different levels and what kinds of services we engage in, the mental health piece is really where we do need the most assistance from the county. Traditionally and historically, that has not been a function of city government. It has been the function of county government and state government. But as fewer and fewer resources at the state and county level are going to providing those services, we are feeling the impact of that much more greatly at the local level and becoming engaged in providing services that we haven't in the past. So to see, you know, I would love to see a county budget with a lot more dollar signs associated with mental health outreach and services.
And sobering centers and things.
Yes.
So what can we do as individuals to help promote that? Or, basically my question is, how do we fix it?
That is a really good question. You know, one of the reasons that we've seen a shift in our own budget is because we hear from our community. And, you know, prior to COVID, you know, we would have council chambers filled with individuals to testify about the impacts of homelessness and about the need of the homeless community, all of these different things. But it would show up regularly, they email regularly. You know, I've never worked in county government. I don't know what they see, but I do seriously doubt that they see chambers filled with individuals asking them for more mental health services. You know, so I think local government just hears from constituents in a very different way than county government does.
Probably very true, yeah.
So, and so I think, you know, doing that kind of outreach for the community to do that outreach and saying, you know, we've got a mental health crisis that's tied in and embedded with a housing crisis and an unsheltered crisis, and they're all hand in hand, and an addiction crisis, and we need your partnership. We need you to step up on that side of things.
So we need to go to the county meetings.
And the emails, too. I mean, Councillor Stapleton can tell you, you know, how many emails. I want them on their email list, too. And it's, and plus they get individual ones that I don't see, you know. I mean, when council members get buried with emails on issues like this.
Yeah.
If there's a couch on a street somewhere, councillors are going to know about it.
Did we get that couch cleaned up, by the way?
The couch is cleaned up, but I think there's a recliner there and maybe some dining room chairs.
We're trying. You guys should invite a commissioner to come to your meeting. That would be fantastic.
I've asked Cherie to check into that. So
yeah,
that's good.
I have kind of a maybe three or four prong question. I was writing things on sticky, so let's see how I did. One of the things that I'm always curious about, and this might not be something you answer, I just feel like it's a question that I always want to be brought up. Do we know, do we have a way of determining the percentage of people seeking shelter, like veterans, families without homes and whatnot, versus those that just want to live on the street? And if so, how do people who don't want any kind of shelter or help, how do we hold them somewhat accountable for the destruction or the garbage or, you know, human waste that is happening? Because it seems like we're just kind of like, well, that's just where it is, and we can't help that because
they don't want help, and now we just give them free rein almost, in a way, is what I mm-hmm. what I see. So I guess it's kind of a, you know, what is, how do we understand that percentage? How do we know the people that are really wanting help versus those that are like, I just want to live on the streets and I don't want to be a part of this society? What do we do with that?
Yeah, so now you're getting into philosophy. you know, I was talking about this, the balance of free will, right, and self-determination, all these things. We can't parent or force someone who is another legal adult to do something that we want them to do, right? But how do we balance the needs of that versus living in a society together and having influences on each other and consequences, right? All of those things. So this is you've asked a bigger question than I can probably answer here, but I will say a couple of things. How do I want to start? We'll start with a percentage. So
yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was like, what is, I just want to be like, is there any way of tracking that? Do people know? Do we know as a city?
Yeah, and I don't know that we have exact numbers. Kristen, maybe you know. I hear...
I don't have exact numbers, but I can jump in on this in a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. So I hear rough estimates of the total amount of people. And of course, that is changes, right? Like the school district has a whole nother different number because they're viewing homelessness in a different way. So there's a lot of numbers, I think, is what I'm trying to say. And trying to figure out the reasons behind are even a greater challenge. And I'm not entirely sure that the city is, I'm going to say this and then I might be wrong. I'm not entirely sure that the city is all too interested in trying to figure out exactly the when, what, why, and who. We're just kind of looking at the issue of, okay, this is where you're at, and how are we going to help you with the day-to-day, and how are we going to address the crisis from the other end, right? And we're leaving the kind of the detailedness of it to our care providers who have the relationships, right? They have the relationships, they know the people, they know their history, they know their story, and they are, that's their business, kind of being in the relationship with those folks. And I think the city is trying to grapple with, one, how do we shift super fast into being the end line, the, you know, the holding everything together part, and how do we get an infrastructure for this in place, right? Those are more of the conversations that I'm doing. Kristen, was that fair of me to say?
Yeah. I mean, so every year we being the greater area, so it's done with a lot of partners, conduct a point in time count every January. And, you know, our homeless population, based on the point in time count, and that's people who are out walking into camps, walking along sidewalks, and doing basically a head count on that day, same day, every year, that number's right around 1,500 homeless individuals. Now, that's probably on the low side, and it's hard to capture people that are living in their vehicles, that aren't in places where the counters can get to them, or people that are maybe couch surfing, and you know, I'm crashing with this friend for this week, and then I'm heading off somewhere else for another week, and so they are sheltered, but not really with any kind of permanency. You know, so there are kind of a lot of different levels and categories, and a lot that fall through the cracks at that point in time count. You know, we also have an intake system through ARCHES and a system, a coordinated entry system that the nonprofits participate in. So if any homeless individual in the community that goes to seek services from one of our service providers goes through the coordinated entry system. And there's a lot of information that is gained about that individual through that process. And then people can pass through an assessment system through ARCHES that looks really closely at things like, how long have you been homeless? Where did you come from? really gets more into background information and what kind of traumas they may have had. Are they a vet? Are there addiction issues? Are there other kind of physical health issues? And then they're scored based on that, and then that helps prioritize what kind of case management and assistance they need and that they get as they work with the different partners. So, that's just some higher level background. I don't know that doesn't really get to the question of percentages of people who want help and who don't want help. And I don't know that we ever could get to that number, because one of the biggest challenges that we have with that, who services this, if who wants help, who doesn't want help, is the mental health and the addiction piece of it. And that's why we really, for every case manager we have through HRAP, that's out there on the street, we need mental health professionals that are there with them, because there are a lot of individuals on the streets that we would say are service resistant, but they're service resistant, a lot of them, because they have such severe mental illness, generally compounded with drug addiction because of self-medication, that you can't have a coherent conversation with them about services. You could go to a person and offer them housing and the support, but you just can't have a conversation or get a decision from them. So I don't know that it's fair to say that they don't want housing. I don't know that they are at a competent mental state to determine whether or not they want it. So that is a big category of the people that are probably the most visible people in the community and maybe some of the most destructive individuals that we see downtown or in camp, so kind of fall in that category. Now, there are also others that, and a lot of these are veterans, that they don't want assistance. They want just to be left alone. They don't necessarily want a roof over their heads. They just want to be left alone, out there in the camps. We've assisted into housing that have decided, hey, we don't like the rules. We don't want the rules that go along with being in housing. I want to go back to my camp family where I don't have the rules. That's the reality of some of the individuals as well.
So I guess that's kind of part of the question too, is how or why these people who don't want to follow the rules, why are they given the free rein to not follow the rules?
Mm-hmm. So that's also a complex answer that has been made much more difficult during COVID. Behaviors that some of these people would engage in that would be criminal or arrestable behaviors because of COVID and because of jail policies relating to COVID. We haven't had prosecutors that will prosecute jails that will house, so really no enforceability because of COVID. And so the few things that we were able to enforce leading into COVID has really kind of all gone off the rails because of COVID. Now that we're coming out of COVID, I would anticipate that jail policies and prosecutor policies will start to change again so that those actions that are criminal in nature, the people have been just sort of, getting a pass on inappropriate and illegal behaviors for the last year. The most they can get a citation, but if you don't have a home and you don't have any money, you're not going to pay your citation. But in the past, some of those offenses, they would be jailable offenses, and they just haven't been for the last year. So yeah, there's been a bit of anarchy out there with some of these behaviors and the lack of accountability and lack of enforcement, because the system hasn't been operating the way the system typically operates. And it's hard to have accountability if there's no consequence. And it's, when we look at trying to bring people into housing, that accountability piece is really important. Whether it's accountability, you're at a camp and you've got a tent, and if you're going to get the service, you need to keep your tent space tight. Baby steps like that help that transition into housing. if there are no rules and no accountability and complete chaos, to expect a person to successfully move from that environment into a housing environment in an apartment complex with next door neighbors, they're not going to be very successful. You know, they need some accountability to help prepare them for that transition into housing.
I would second everything Kristen just said. You said it really well. Thank you.
You're welcome. Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
I'm sorry, this is Linda again. Just to kind of go off of Vincenzo's questions. You know, when Kristen, when you were talking about the tracking and getting more information, where did you come from? How long have you been homeless? Does that facilitate, does that gathering of information facilitate different aspects for that nonprofit to get funding? Is that something that carries over so that now we can see these numbers of where they're coming from? Does it somehow reinforce their request for money from other agencies? Just wondering about that.
No, that's independent of funding, how those nonprofits are funded.
So it doesn't matter situations, it's just numbers that might support more funding.
Well, those numbers and that data is collected not to help with funding, it's collected to help coordinate the services that are being provided.
All right.
Right.
All right, thank you.
I got to do the point and count time this last January, and it was really fascinating. And it was good. It was a good thing to do if anybody's interested. I strongly recommend going out on a very cold January day and talking to folks. So I did have one more topic to talk about. I know I'm trying to watch the clock too. So if you guys want, we can move on, or we can ask some more questions about this complex issue.
Let's move on.
Okay. So last on the list was if you guys wanted to talk about parking, which is a great topic. So I don't know if there's anything for me really to say other than to open it up to a discussion. But if I'm remembering correctly, you guys sent a letter to council at the budget time talking about this topic, and I replied, I forwarded it to Steve and said, hey, how are we going to support this, and what do we need to do to get this ball rolling on this with their request? And he said, all I need is a motion and a council meeting. So that was something that I was going to, if I have your blessing, I guess, to push forward at a later council meeting. I am not going to be at this next one. I kind of wanted to get the budget done and then move on to new projects as we move on to kind of that's done, kind of a big thing off of our plate, and then we can open it up for more things that we want to work on as a council. So it is on my list, the 60 things that I want to do. But do you guys want to talk about this, ask questions, start a conversation about it?
Well, it's kind of hard to talk about parking. It's I feel like we're one of the only, we are one of the only downtowns in a city of this population to not pay parking. Well, there's some elements that are, but it leads to a lot of difficulties, and as Sheree, and we've been harping on this for a long time, challenges from a budget standpoint. And no one likes paying for parking, but the reality is someone's paying for it. And in this case, our model is that each building owner is charged with their prorata amount with a minimum charge, but it's still, of course, never enough to cover the cost of increased maintenance and security and all the other things that go in part of making sure that downtown's fun and friendly and safe and thriving for businesses and guests and for events. But I guess the context of the question is about a prospective transition to that kind of model. And I'll call it an investment too, because there's cost for that. Because we have Streetscape coming as well, which is going to be amazing. that maybe might coincide. So maybe that was a good prompt.
Yeah, all of it, I think, really coincides. And I think actually coming out of COVID is a really great time to do this. When we talk about changing the way that a society functions, that's a really big ship, and we're going to try and move it. I'm used to parking downtown for free, right? And so everybody else is. And so how do we kind of change that mindset into something else? And I think a great way to phrase it right now is, how are we going to support small businesses in our downtown after COVID? And one of the ways that we can do that is by alleviating this tax from them and each of us paying for parking when we go downtown to utilize that. So I know that the argument on the other side would be, well, if it's paid parking, I'm not going to go downtown, I'm not going to support those businesses, right? But I think that as we grow up, as the city of Salem grows up, we're starting to realize the different ways that we need to change. And one of those ways is by having parking in downtown. So just like every other city our size, like you mentioned, Josh, we're trying to grow up, and that's always a hard thing to do. But I'm there for that conversation. I guess a lot of people say, do you have the political will or appetite? And I think that you got to be brave and bold and make moves where you can help further your society, your town, to the next level. So I'm fine with that political will, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And this is a conversation even before your letter that I was having with Kristen, you know, just wondering, when are we going to make this transition? When are we going to change? How does that work with the treescaping? How does it work with outdoor dining now? Like all of the changes that we're experiencing downtown, this, I just feel it's a really great time. We have that kind of momentum to make some big changes downtown to support the vision that we have for it as a city. And I think that when everybody kind of calms down after hearing the startling fact that they might have to pay for parking, they can kind of get that vision again and be like, oh yeah, we're in this together, and this is how we're gonna move forward with this. So I agree with your statement.
Well, your voice is critical. You are the downtown counselor.
Still shocking to learn that.
Well, I guess a follow-up question to that, you know, a critical voice in this is the business community. Here I am looking at the sticker for the Salem Chamber. You mentioned spending some time with them in the context of Front Street development. What's your engagement been like with downtown business community or chamber or like that?
Yeah, I think the first business owner that I met with was Jim Wu. Is that how you pronounce his last name? He called me up. Actually, he called Kara up. And Kara enforced the introduction, and Kara introduced us, and we went out for drinks and got to know each other. And then, like I mentioned last week, having a conversation with Main Street. And those are kind of been my, experiences with downtown businesses so far. COVID, of course, makes this so challenging, because I would love to just be able to go and meet in person and be a regular at some of these meetings. It just makes it complicated so far, but that has been my extent of that outreach. And like I mentioned in the intro, definitely have a learning curve and an educating, steep climb to get fully up to speed. And that includes the relationship part for folks downtown. So,
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, Sheree, where would you like to take it from here? I'm looking at the clock. We have 14 minutes, and I want to be respectful of everybody's time, including yours, Counselor. You're going off to the Glacier trip. Sheree, you got some packing to do.
Just a little bit.
Does anybody have any other questions for Kristen or anything for the good of the order? Okay.
Josh, I will say that I, you know, my
Stapleton.
Oh. Sorry, you went ahead again. I didn't hear you.
Sure, you there.
Oh yes. Well, I didn't want to talk over her. I just wanted her to know that she doesn't have to stay for the rest of the meeting. if nobody has any more questions, certainly she's given us a lot more time than probably she has in her busy schedule. We so appreciate it. I hope you're okay with us asking you, you're always welcome to attend. We've had, I've been here long enough where we've had mayor and counselors who have attended all of our monthly meetings just because that's who they are and they had the time, but it's also based on your availability, but you're always welcome. I think the board is really going to benefit from having this conversation, getting to know you, and the thought that you're going to be working to move forward a paid system to help with financial sustainability, but it will provide better service at the end of the day. People don't know that, but it will. The things that people get tickets for that they don't like, it goes away with the paid system. But it will have to be a partnership with the chamber. We need, you know, others on board to help us through implementing something like that. So it will be, we are there for you and appreciate you being there for us, and have a wonderful vacation.
Thank you so much. And yeah, thanks for having me. It was really great to meet all of you guys and spend so much time talking about all these really big and complex issues. I'm like I said, thrilled to be your counselor and always available by email. So please reach out anytime you have any questions or any asks or things that I can help with. And I look forward to meeting you all in person at some point in time.
Yes, we gotta get together.
Take care of yourselves.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, maybe we should have had her stay because we've got an exciting post-COVID downtown event, block party to advocate for.
So yeah, we don't need to do B, just go to C, Josh. That sounds good.
Okay. Well, I think, as you see all over the country, obviously Oregon, we're still reopening. People are celebrating, you know, I mean, COVID will never really end, but really I'll just call it the end of COVID and restrictions and limited occupancy and the challenges. And, you know, Jordan, maybe this is for you, Kim, because you were telling me a story one time that you did a pole vault down the middle of Church Street or State Street. What was it?
Summer? Yeah, it was the good old days of summer in the city, and I pole vaulted on Court Street.
Court.
Yeah, it was a fun time.
So what was the nature of that? I mean, was it shutting down the streets? What was it?
Well, From what I recall of it, it basically it was a day where they pretty much shut down the core of downtown, and they put traffic blocks up on Ferry Street so the traffic could still go towards Front and Water, the Waterfront Park, but the heart of downtown was closed down for traffic, and all the vendors and stores would bring items outside and have sales. There was live music, food vendors. This was kind of before food carts were a thing, so food carts could be there, and then there were events that would be of interest. And so our pole vaulting club, when I was in college pole vaulting, we set up all of our pole vaulting equipment on Court Street, right down the center of the center lane, and vaulted just before the traffic light. So it got a lot of attention. It was a lot of fun. There was people out. There was an event at Waterfront Park. It was kind of, I think at the same time, or it coincided with what is now Cherry Fest, what was the Bite of Salem. So it was one of those outdoor events that just was all of downtown, and it was great. I don't know why it went away or what happened. I was in college and then all that. Maybe Sheree and remembers.
Really precedence there, right, for reviving it.
There's only been one summer in the city since I've been here, so it wasn't the one that you participated in, Jordan. Go Downtown Salem, the Downtown Association, they did a summer in the city, and they closed off Liberty, I think, between Court and Ferry, and they had a bunch of different activities. You know, they had sand, you know, box type things for kids. They had some areas where there was live music, and because of OLCC regulations, those had to be self-contained, you know. It was interesting that the businesses, because of the OLCC regulations that were outside of the fencing, weren't real happy because they were inside the fencing, but that was an option that they could have had. It was very expensive, and I know that the Downtown Association did the best they could getting sponsors and contributions, but it didn't continue because I think they out-of-pocketed a significant portion of their budget. They weren't able to get the money for it, but it was certainly fun. And there was a lot of different things for a lot of different age groups that were going on that I'm unfamiliar with. It was only one time since I've been here.
Well, I don't know. It does sound expensive, depending on the scale of it. But I know we've just shut down the state during COVID by simply putting up some traffic control devices. I certainly wouldn't imagine any outside vendors. But is this an example where DAP might request staff to come up with something of substance to flesh out what would it mean, or is it possible, and what resources are required?
Well, you know, Josh, when you brought this up, I shared with you that typically an event isn't something that the city, you know, originates. It comes from, just like we had Music Day on Monday of this week, so there was music all over in downtown. That came from Mark Green and people that, you know, are musicians. Just like the Downtown Association did Summer in the City, when we did the Bite and Brew, or the, what was it, the big cultural one that happens in the park, it isn't the city that usually generates that. It can be partnerships with, I don't think Travel Salem does events. They're there to help, you know, get the message out about it. I can certainly talk to Kristen about, and then of course we don't have a budget for something like that, because it, when we paid the Downtown Association, it always came out of the parking fund. I see Jordan in the background.
Yes. Well, I guess I would love if, I mean, if we could just consider this being the official ask. I just softly floated it to a member of Main Street and the Chamber, and they're all about it. So I said I'd bring it up at the meeting. It's on our agenda, and I would love if it'd be possible to hear from staff, because there's a coordination effort. And I'm just a little vibe check, pulse check from some of the other downtown business owners, at least on the state, and they're all about it. And so I think it'd be wonderful, and the cost would be borne to the businesses that are already downtown.
Can I ask a radical question? Anyone? Yes, can I?
Can we stop you?
No, don't. You won't want to. You will want to, don't worry. So, you know, I love this idea, right? And I know it's probably not possible. It's definitely not possible. But what if there was a possibility or a way? Okay, let me rephrase it. Let me actually say some other things. So we had Rotary. We had a guy from Independence talking about how great Independence is getting, and it's just wonderful, and it's thriving, and their downtown's so cute, because there's not a highway going through their downtown. And I was like, okay, what could we do? How could we? It got me sad, because I was like, I don't even know what we could do that's similar to this, because like you've said, Sheree, part of it is like owned by ODOT or whatever. And so is there a way, though, if we're talking, maybe you guys are talking about this exact same thing, but if we closed off like state, go from state to Chemeketa and high to commercial, and just have that kind of, sorry, I'm looking at a map, you guys aren't, but have that whole kind of core area. Could we try like making it not car, like
centric, like, because the other thing I'm thinking about when I look at this, I know this is very big, this isn't such a discreet answer, but like, then it's still, it kind of forces people to use the parquets.
Ratio, lead or variably?
I'm talking about permanently.
we can't talk about that now.
This came up a lot during the Streetscape project. Mm-hmm. And Public Works was very, very clear that
it'll never
anything happen. From the curb on the roadway is off the table. That has to go through a whole transportation system planning
right.
process. There are a lot of other factors and rules and you know, relationships with the state and state highways that govern it. So there was no openness to that discussion at the time we were Streetscape.
Yeah.
And it's a very big issue. It's a conversation is much bigger than anything kind of resolved within the gap.
Yeah, I was kind of concerned. He was just talking about so many great things, and it's just like, and I was in, you know, Fort Collins, last week, and it was this cute downtown, and everyone drove 25 miles because that's what you did, and then you looked, and then you stopped, you know, and we just can't even try to accomplish that right now with the way the ODOT kind of has a jurisdiction on us. So I don't know. I'll talk to someone.
The closest that we could get to really dreaming about something that might. The closest we could get to feasibility would be doing something like what Boise did, and they did it because of COVID, and they're looking at keeping it permanently, and that is would be probably closest like Court Street here.
Okay.
And they closed it off. I think it's one or two block section where they closed it and made it pedestrian only, so that they could expand their outdoor dining.
Right, and that's kind of because I'm looking at the thing and. If it went from, I guess I said state, I guess it's three blocks. No, two blocks. Well, now I want to look at Boise.
Well, I know it's 1:30. I love energy, but I'm off for a work session or whatever you want to call it for party planning committee, whatever you want to call it. We should celebrate downtown. We should celebrate the amphitheater, like, and all the good things happening, the great information. Exchange from the city to down. I think it could be wonderful, and I think people are just yearning for something to do, and this would be a great avenue to do that. But I'll be respectful of the time because we have improvement grant exception requests. If Sheree, if you want to go over that quickly, we can adjourn.
Yes, I just want you to know that I've received requests for exceptions to the maximum grant. From the Homewood Hotel developer and from the developer of the former Nordstrom's building, the Homewood Hotel, and I'll give you more details after Monday night when it goes through agency board, but they want to start construction next month, and the Nordstrom's redevelopment proposal would be they would take that down, they would take the Nordstrom's building down, and they will be building 100-some units of market-rate housing, a small area of on-site parking and very little retail, and that would probably start spring of 22. So I just wanted you to know that is very exciting news that we're gonna see some movement in that northern area of our downtown core, and there's still active interest in the Penny's building that we keep hearing about, and that would be very significant too. So I just wanted you to know that I'm going in for some grant exceptions on that. In the past, I've always had the developers come and show you their renderings and stuff, and if we can do that virtually, I'll try to have them come and visit with you. And Josh, when we talked about ideas about trying to increase the vibrancy in the parking structures, and we had ideas like we could do a quote-unquote garage sale and and sell the spaces in the parking garage for people to walk through. It obviously was during COVID and we knew we were limited to outside. Jordan had indicated that he didn't think that that was something staff should do, that that was something that we should turn over that space to have somebody else organize for us and figure out the best way to utilize and create vibrancy. So that's in the back of my mind about what you're talking about too. Would it be better to try to get momentum for somebody else to want to do that type of event and find a way to support them?
I would advocate for a work session. Let's get it all out on the table and let's just brainstorm and see where and who and what. Parking garages, street partners, but it would be good to know functionally from the city. Like, hey, you could do state and the alley and court between Liberty and Commercial, you know, if that's what we're limited to, or if there's a tester or whatnot. But we're getting over now, but I guess to close that loop, I would advocate for a work session.
I'll put it on the agenda for next month.
Sweet.
Great. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, so do we need to formally adjourn?
I'm Jen. I know you were squeezing me in. Thank you.
We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Yeah.